Education Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum, although there are still members that aren't here yet. I think the first order of business before we get to our overview will be an introduction of our members. We have a number of new members on this committee this year, and I would like to have each one of them introduce themselves, tell a little about them. We'll have the same thing as the others arrive, they'll be put through the same drill. So, Ron, would you like to start?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Abrams. I'm a ninth-term member from District 43B, which is the northern two-thirds of Minnetonka. First tier of seven precincts in Plymouth. I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota. Also, as another member of this committee, went to the Harvard Law School. My wife is a graduate of the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota Medical School. My oldest child is a freshman at the University of Minnesota. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law are graduates of the University of Minnesota, and my father graduated second in his class in the School of Metallurgical Engineering at the School of the University of Minnesota. I point out, Mr. Chairman, that that class had three members.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Excuse me, everyone. I'm Carlos Mariani Rosa. I'm beginning my eighth term. I came in a term after Representative Abrams. And I represent, actually you're sitting in my district. I represent the center part of St. Paul. The capital, Mr. Chair, is on the northern edge of my district. And it runs through downtown, across the river to the west side, which is not on the west side of the city, but it's just called the west side, up to the county line. And my own higher ed background, I'm actually a McAllister product, so I'm out of the private school system. However, I've had a couple stints over at the University of Minnesota, and my wife is a University of Minnesota alum. I have a strong interest in higher education issues because I really credit higher education access and opportunities for my ability to move effectively, I hope, through society. My parents were immigrants with less than an eighth grade education between them, and their children have been able to move forward in the United States largely due to successful access to higher education. And I think that's a legacy that I'd like to be able to continue as a public servant in promoting public policy related to college access and successful participation in college. So, Mr. Chair, I look forward to serving with you personally and working with you on this committee.
Thank you. Representative Cox.
Mr. Chair, I'm Ray Cox. I represent District 25B. Which is just south of the metro area here. This is my second term. The area includes Northfield and Lonsdale and over to Belle Plaine, eight townships in Rice County and three townships in Scott County. I'm a product of St. Olaf College for 2 years. I finished at St. Olaf College. I spent 2 years at Ripon College over in Wisconsin. And I've got two children that have gone through and graduated at Luther College. And I've got a daughter that's a junior at St. Olaf College right now. So some private school background, although I've got brothers and sisters. There's six of us here, and we're equally split. Half of them went to the University of Minnesota or University of Minnesota Duluth, and the others were at Carleton or St. Olaf. So we've got good representation, sort of a bipartisan representation that way. And I was on this committee last year. I enjoyed it. I am proud to say that we've got two great colleges in my district, Carleton and St. Olaf, and I don't have a state institution, but care very much about keeping them as healthy as we can. So thank you.
Representative Olpatz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Joel Olpatz. I'm in my seventh term representing District 15B, which is much of the city of St. Cloud as well as one township. In my district is St. Cloud State University as well as St. Cloud Technical College. I am a graduate of St. Cloud State University, as well as having earned my PhD at the University of Minnesota in higher education studies, and I have made a career of higher education. I continue and have worked at St. Cloud State University in a number of capacities for 18 years in the administration, have done some teaching, and I've taught at the University of Minnesota as well. I have served on this committee for many years. I took a couple years off and very happy to be back.
Very good. I'm Representative Bud Nornes, and I represent District 10A, which is the western half of Otter Tail County in the western part of Minnesota. I'm beginning my fifth term, and I have basically lived in Minnesota all my life. In the district I live in, I've only been there for 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting acquainted. There's new people coming in all the time. It's amazing. That's the hard part about when you're an old timer, you got to keep up with the new younger generation that's coming in too. So I enjoy living in the part of the state I live in, surrounded by lakes, a lot of things that we really, really enjoy. I'm a graduate of Brown Institute. My children have all attended state institutions, one form or another. Two attended the community college in Fergus Falls and went on to St. Cloud State University and the University of Minnesota. And one of my three children graduated from the tech school in Staples. So they've all experienced different levels, different types of opportunities in education in the state, and I'd say they've all had a good experience as they've done that. So we're proud of our three kids. This is my second term on this committee, and I look forward to a very productive year. Representative Eastland, would you like to tell us about yourself?
Well, I'm been in the legislature. This is my third term, beginning of my third term. I graduated from Cambridge High School when it was still a rural community. It's changed quite a bit in the last few years. Attended the University of Minnesota, graduated with an education degree. I taught school for about 6 years, and then I entered agriculture as a second career, and I farmed and milked cows for about 20 years, and then I'm here in the legislature today. And I'm also a commercial builder and property manager is what I do when I'm not here. But this has been I've never served in the higher ed committee, but I have an interest in education. I have a community college in my district, and I look forward to being able to get more involved in issues with higher ed.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, by way of background, I was elected in 1972, so this is my 17th term. Someone mentioned their time in Minnesota. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident. Then on this committee, I was trying to calculate, I think about 26 years, thereabouts, of my 32. Virtually every term served in one education committee or another, but this one has been kind of constant of the group. By way of my education background, I'm a graduate of what was known as Mankato State when I graduated. Now it's Minnesota State Mankato. We've utilized the public higher education system in my family fairly extensively. My wife did her undergraduate work at the University of North Carolina Greensboro. She's a North Carolinian originally. And got a doctorate here at the University of Minnesota a few years ago. My daughter graduated University of Minnesota Morris. She utilized reciprocity and got her master's degree at North Dakota Institution. One of my sons used reciprocity and got his undergraduate work right on the board of the North Dakota. So I've always been glad I supported reciprocity. It cost me a pretty penny if I hadn't. My other son utilized the technical college system. And by way of my profession, I'm a retired teacher from Minneapolis Public Schools. My last assignment was at Edison High School in Northeast Minneapolis.
Representative Lance.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And it's a pleasure to be serving on my second term in the legislature and on this committee. Mr. Chairman, glad to be here with you. I'm a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the reciprocity program. Don't hold the badges against me. But I grew up attending Gopher football and basketball games with my parents, who were both active at the U. My dad is a graduate of the University of Minnesota, served on the Board of Regents at the university, and chair of the Board of Governors of the hospital there. And my mom's a graduate of Metro State. So though I've got the background, I don't have any district, I don't have any institutions actually in my district, just a lot of students and professors. My wife graduated from the University of Minnesota. None of my kids have, because they're 6 and 3. So you don't know where they'll be going. I am the other one that Representative Abrams referred to, with a law degree from out east, and came back home, and I'm glad to be here and to serve on this committee again. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you. I'm Dean Erdahl. I'm in my second term. And also just concluded my 34th year as a 7th grade history teacher at New London Spicer, for lower education. I represent 18B, which is Meeker County, and 6 townships in Wright County, Litchfield, my hometown, being the largest city in the district, graduate of Litchfield High School, graduate of St. Cloud State, Harvard of the Midwest, I call it. Might be stretching it just a little bit. I have 3 sons. 2 are graduates of Hamline. 1 is a graduate of River Falls under reciprocity, but it was hockey related. My wife has 2 years of college and is attempting now to go back to school and finish her degree. I don't have any colleges in my district, but Ridgewater, with campuses in Hutchinson and Wilmer, borders my district. Looking forward to working with all of you and trying to get some good things done for higher education.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Gene Pulaski. I represent Winona and Houston counties. A week ago today, I was teaching at Winona Senior High, and whenever session ends, assuming we're still in school at Winona, I will be returning.
I think we need to also meet the staff, so I'd like the staff to introduce themselves. Mary, do you want to go first?
Hi, I'm Mary Talega, and this is my 15th year of session, my first year on higher ed, so looking forward to meeting all of you.
I'm Mike Miller. I'm committee administrator. This is my 4th session with the committee and my 3rd different chair.
Sounds like my son's baseball career.
It sounds like I've got a problem there. I'm going to start to correct that problem by passing out cookies. I'm going to pass those that way. Actually, a Christmas gift that I don't want to share alone, all by myself. Oh, yeah. Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike Meilenberg, and this is my 2nd session and my first attempt at higher education.
Yeah.
I'm Doug. Fiscal analyst for the committee, and I've done so for 11 sessions now.
Okay. I'd like to have the committee make note that in their packet there is a listing, a complete roster of staff and members, so you might want to put that where you can find it. Our order of business today includes an overview of higher education, and to do that for us today, we have Doug Berg and Kathy Novak, and who is going to start? Kathy Novak.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is going to be an overview from a fairly high level. I'm going to start by reading about an overview of higher education, and Mr. Berg is going to go over the fiscal parts of higher education, and then we'll come back to the end of this overview if there's some, and talk about some of the recent changes that have been made in the laws for higher education. So I'm going to go quickly over just some of the component parts, try to get them all together in one place. And if you have questions, please feel free to ask, or we can wait until the end of the presentation, whichever you prefer. The first aspect of higher education on page 2 of the handout is the University of Minnesota. It has an enrollment this fall of about 64,000 students, undergraduate and graduate students. It has one doctoral campus in the Twin Cities. It's the only research doctoral campus in Minnesota. The other three campuses in Duluth, Princeton, and Morris are comprehensive state equivalent to comprehensive universities. And then it operates other facilities throughout the state. The map shows you where the facilities are located. The University of Minnesota predates the state of Minnesota, and so it has what is known as constitutional autonomy. And in the charter of the university, the regents are given the authority to govern the university. It's governed by a 12-member board of regents that are elected by the state legislature. This session, or in 2005, there will be four terms that are expiring on the regents, and so this legislature will be charged with electing regents to those four positions. Next is the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. It's on the next page. Again, the map shows you approximately where the various institutions are. It has an enrollment of about 170,000 students, and as you can see from the chart there, that most, the vast majority of the enrollment, or the majority of the enrollment anyway, is in the two-year state colleges, and they are technical colleges, community colleges, and a consolidated technical and community college. And then there are seven four-year state universities, which are comprehensive universities. Altogether, MinSU has approximately 33 institutions that operate campuses in 46 communities throughout the state. MinSU's governance structure is established in statute, and under the statutes in Minnesota, it is governed by a 15-member board of trustees. The members of the board are appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. And like the University of Minnesota, there's a geographic distribution of board of trustees as there are with the board of regents. I think that's about it. The next component of higher education is the private component, and Minnesota has a wide range and a large number of private institutions, and they're broken into or categorized into three different categories. In these three categories, there's approximately 85,000 students. The numbers for private institutions, are enrollment numbers, are not as reliable as the enrollment numbers for some of the public institutions, primarily because of the somewhat spotty information on the private proprietary schools. They don't all report as the public and private colleges and universities. The private colleges and universities are primarily four-year liberal arts schools. There are schools such as Hamline, Carleton, Concordia. And most of them are nonprofit institutions that primarily offer baccalaureate degrees. The private career schools are usually two-year schools. Most of them are organized in for-profit institutions. They have programs that can be completed in several months to several years. Some of the schools offer baccalaureate degrees. Some of them offer limited graduate programs. Some of the schools that you would recognize, the larger ones are Brown Institute, the Minnesota School of Business. And they're located in both the metro and out-state Minnesota. And then the private graduate professional schools offer specialized graduate or professional programs. They include schools such as Bethel Seminary, William Mitchell Law School, and the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine. The chart shows you that most of the private career schools are located in the metro area. The ones in the metro area tend to be larger than the ones outside of the metro area. The private colleges and universities are split kind of evenly between the metro and non-metro areas of the state. And there's a wide variability in the size of these schools. They range from very small to very, very large. Just as a kind of a brief overview of tuition and fees in the public sector, the governing boards of the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota system have the responsibility for setting tuition and fees. These are not addressed in state law. Other states have much more control over, or tend to have more control over tuition and fees, but in Minnesota, that authority is delegated to the governing board. This chart shows us that there's a range of tuition fees. They're not unified even by type of institution. So, for example, the two-year colleges in the Minsky system have, in this current academic year, their tuition and fees range from $3,456 to $4,053. If you look at 2000-2001 academic year, those tuition and fees at the high end have increased by over 52%. So tuition, as we've all been hearing about, has been going up. The state universities are again $4,392 to $6,325, and you can see the rest are in the private colleges tend to be more expensive, but there are some that are more closely aligned to the state universities. Just as a comparison, average tuition and fees according to the College Board for 2004-2005 in public four-year universities, it is $5,132, which is about in the middle of the range of our state universities. Average tuition and fees for two-year colleges is lower than our tuition and fees at about $2,076, and the private colleges are about $20,000. The next quick snapshot is some enrollment trends. There are a couple things that are shown on the chart on the top. It shows that the public two-year colleges and then few two-year colleges have about 50 or 60% of the enrollment in post-secondary education. There's a total undergraduate enrollment of about 264,000, and that was in 2003. And the public two-year colleges accounted for about 113,000 of that, or 43% actually. It's easier to see the enrollment trends by looking at the chart. Undergraduate enrollment at the University of Minnesota system increased by about 2.5% from 2000 to 2003. The state universities increased about 9% over that time period. The two-year colleges increased about 11%. And the private colleges and universities increased about 5%. And in graduate enrollment, the important growth was at the University of Minnesota, where they have around almost 18,000 graduate students in 2003. And that's an increase of 24% from their graduate enrollment in 2000. There is some graduate enrollment at the state universities and at some of the private colleges and universities. The other aspect of higher education that this committee will be looking at is the Higher Education Services Office. and it has the responsibility for administering student aid. It registers and licenses private institutions. It collects a lot of enrollment data and financial aid data. It provides information to students and families, and it has some responsibility for technology and library programs in Minnesota. Some of the specific programs that it has are the Interstate Tuition Reciprocity Program. It provides student loans. It's responsible for outreach programs such as the Federal Get Ready Program. It has several types of financial aid programs, including work study, both federal and state, and the state grant program, and the child care grant program. In addition to the responsibilities for registering and licensing private institutions. The most important, perhaps, of the programs that are administered by HESO is the state grant program. Minnesota is ranked in the top of the nation, towards the top of the nation, in the amount of grant aid that are provided to students. The state grant program, which I'm sure we will talk about more extensively, is a need-based financial aid program funded with general fund appropriations. To be eligible for the program, you have to meet the need criteria, which is based on your income and the cost of attendance. Students attending both private and public schools are eligible for the program. And it covers a share of the cost of post-secondary education. The graph in the middle of page 8 shows some of the trends in funding for higher education by students. This doesn't include private own source contributions, but it's loans, grants, and work study awards. As you can see, the amount of loans have increased rather dramatically. While funding from all three of these sources over this time period, which is 1993 to 2003, has increased 125%, loans have increased 183%, so they're growing faster than the total amount of funding from these sources. The principal forms of grant funds, which don't have to be repaid, are the federal Pell Grant and the state grant program. In 2003, which is shown on this sheet here, the maximum Pell Grant was $4,000. About 77,000 Minnesota undergraduates received an average award of $2,200. The state grant program, which is funded with $134 million of state general fund appropriation, made awards to 72,000 students, undergraduate students, with an average of award of around 1,800. According to some recent results of 2004, the state grant program provided $115 million in grants to 69,600 students with an average award of $1,656. So the number of students went down and the size of the award went down from 2003 to 2004. Finally, at the bottom of the sheet is a distribution of the grant award by enrollment and by type of institution. And private career schools are left out of the enrollment side of this grant because the information, again, as I said, was on their enrollment is somewhat spotty. But if you look, for example, at the MNCU two-year colleges, they have nearly half of the enrollment, 47%, but they only have 16% of the total grant award. The MNCU four-year colleges have about 22% of the enrollment and 15% of the grant awards. The University of Minnesota is most closely aligned. It has 16% of the enrollment and about 19% of the grant award. And the private schools, four-year schools, have 15% of enrollment and nearly 42% of the grant award.
We can interrupt. We have a question, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Novak, twice in your presentation you referenced the private proprietaries and the lack of enrollment information. Do we not request ESOL to have them provide that information?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, private proprietary institutions that participate in the state grant program do report on enrollment. They may not necessarily report every year, but it's difficult to get the total enrollment picture because the private proprietaries that don't participate in the state grant program are under no obligation to report their enrollment.
So, Representative Carlson,
if they participate in the state grant program, they report, but if they do not, but all of them would have to be licensed. Would that be something that would need legislative direction, or is that something that ESO could do as a part of the licensing? And if you don't know that answer, you can let us know later. But I would assume if they license it, that's something that they probably could require if they chose.
Snowbank.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that. I know that last year ESOL had a legislative proposal that would tighten the reporting requirements for the private schools, and they may bring that forward again.
We can discuss that more later than Mr. Chairman. I just happen to think that would be important information that we should have if we to know who's participating in higher education in Minnesota and where. Thank you.
Ms. Novak, you're finished with your part? Okay. Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, members, as I said before, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the finance committee. I'll move from at the same sort of very summary level for the committee members. There are two documents in your packet. One I'll just refer to first. I don't intend to go through it. It's just a reference document for members. It's titled Higher Education at the top. It includes a summary of finance provisions of the current biennial budget bill that passed in 2003. It also has a long-term 25-year appropriations history by account for higher education and it's broken out into shares of the budget, the question that frequently comes up, and both the summary and detailed spreadsheets for the current biennium. Members have questions about that, I'd certainly be happy to answer them or meet with members. This is also all available on our website, so I just will let you know that that's in there for your reference and not refer to it other than that. And mindful of the time, I'll start with a pack of graphs that you have in front of you and also move through those pretty quickly. For members, I know there are a number of members who also have a conflict with the Ways and Means Committee. The first few graphs, you're not missing anything because the first few graphs of this presentation are the same ones you'll see where you're sitting in Ways and Means now, which is the big overview picture of the state budget. If you start out on the first graph, you see that in the current biennium, higher education represents a little less than 9% of general fund appropriations out of a nearly $30 billion biennial budget. That was the position higher education got into after the budget reductions of the last 2 years. If you proceed to the next page, you'll see the same representation for the base budget going into the upcoming biennium. This reflects base increases that have occurred in higher education enrollment. Members probably have heard that the November forecast had some considerable additional funds in the healthcare area, some others. Largely because of those increases in higher ed in enrollment, were the base to be funded, higher education would increase its share of the biennial budget and the budget itself would go up to a little over $30 billion in higher education. We'd go up to 9.1% of that. I'll just comment again that in the reference packet I gave you, there's a long-term history there. That question comes up very often in this committee of what historically has been higher share of the budget. Either slightly below or slightly above 9% of the budget is a figure that has declined since about 1988. And the reference document I mentioned will show that to you over the last 25 years or so. Moving on, you can see the differences where the changes in the state budget have occurred. And the first one is the change in the biennium budget we're currently in over the prior biennium. So when we solved the very large budget problem we had in the 2003 budget session, you can see what amount of that change was attributable to different areas of the budget. And biennium over biennium, higher education took about a $200 million reduction. Now, if you go to the next one, if you look at what will be the change on base budget going forward, because of enrollment increases, if we fund the base and we solve the $700 million shortfall we have projected, higher education would increase by about $211 million. I should note that 211 is actually a little bit off because there was there's a slight change in carry forwards at HESO in the general fund forecast, so I think the number's down to actually 208. Okay, it's just slightly less than 211. Moving on to the next chart, it's very simple. It shows what accounts this committee funds. This committee has four accounts which receive general fund appropriations. The Higher Education Services Office in the current biennium is getting about 14% of this committee's funding. The University of Minnesota, which on here is listed at 42.5%. Another technical note that members probably don't need to know a lot about, there's a portion of the university's budget which gets cycled through the PMAP program in human services to increase federal reimbursement. Because that's now reflected a little differently in the general fund analysis. The percentage reflected for the University of Minnesota here is a little bit different number than what we appropriated 2 years ago, because some of the money that's appropriated to the university is now reflected in another part of the general fund balance, but fairly technical point. MinSCU is worth about 43.5% of the budget in this committee, and Mayo Medical Foundation, which has three programs, is a very small part. I'll note two other things about this graph. This committee is almost entirely general fund dollars. There is one appropriation at the University of Minnesota this committee deals with from the Healthcare Access Fund, which is to cover primary care physician training at the University of Minnesota. That's about $2.2 million annually and is always appropriated in the higher education bill. That's the only non-general fund activity that our bill covers. And I would mention there's one account this committee has which doesn't appear on here because it doesn't get a general fund appropriation. It's the Higher Education Facilities Authority. It is a state agency which is set up to issue revenue bonds, tax-exempt revenue bonds, for construction projects at nonprofit colleges. And it is funded entirely through fees on its members and has an aggregate bond principal limit in statute of currently $800 million. We periodically, this committee reviews and increases that aggregate bond principal outstanding limit, but that agency does not ever receive and never has received a general fund appropriation. Again, moving on to look at what the changes in the base will do, the same chart just shows that if we fund the base fully, the budget for this committee will go up to $2.75 billion. And you see the attendant shares of the base budget in here. Really does not change a great deal because both public systems have enrollment increases. the Higher Ed Services Office share goes down just slightly.
Mr. Berg, we have a question from Representative Ross.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, are we required by law to fund that increase?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, the legislature can make whatever choices it wants as to funding, and the reason it's reflected in the base budget here is because the November forecast includes forecast and statutory base changes that the law specifies. The chart you're looking at includes $208 million of base changes, $205 million in enrollment base changes that are specified by the statutes that control higher education funding. If the legislature chooses not to fund that, then we won't fund it.
Mr. Berg, have there been any changes recently over the last 2 years in budgetary reporting by either the governor's office or the legislature that would indicate that perhaps we might not fund it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, I'm not sure what you mean by changes there. There certainly, in the current biennium that we are in, the legislature did not fund the higher education statutory base fully. I'm not sure if you may be referring to the issue of inflation in the budget, which is also not accounted for in the general fund forecast at this point. But again, the base reflects what statute would set the base for this committee at, and then the legislature will make its own decisions from there.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, so there's been no significant change in the way the governor or the legislature reports these increases, from moving it from one column to another. Let's say that it was in a column that would be a source of revenue that would be automatic to another column that would make that problematic.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, I'm not sure if I'm following where you're going with this. We certainly, as a part of changing the budget or solving the budget problem in the last 2 years, we have made a number of decisions at the legislature in expenditure of funds, how surpluses would be used, accounting of funds and what year they're spent in, for instance, in K-12. To my knowledge, none of those are in the higher education budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, one final question, Mr. Burke. If we do not fund this increase in enrollment, then would it be fair to say that the systems would receive a base cut?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, yes. And that, in fact, happened in the current biennium. This committee share of solving the budget for the budget crisis for the last 2 years. The system statutory budgets were not fully funded.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Pawlowski,
Mr. Berg, one last question. This does not reflect any of the recommendations by either the University of Minnesota or the Minsky system for their budgets in 2005 and 2006. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, 2006 and 2007.
I'm sorry, 2006, 2007.
Is the upcoming budget, and it does not reflect any of the request items. It only reflects the statutory enrollment changes.
Thank you.
Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, Mr. Berg, do you reflect in here what the biennial price work is biennial?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman.
Year to year, but,
Representative Carlson, if you go back to, there are a couple of ways to look at that. If you go back to the third graph in the stack, you'll see what the biennium-to-biennium change by area of the budget is for the 2004-2005 budget versus the prior biennium. And higher education has received $200.3 million less in this biennium than it did in the prior biennium. Now, that's biennium-to-biennium appropriations. Representative Pawlowski was mentioning the issue of the base. The base changes last for the current biennium over The allocations for the current biennium as opposed to base were about $350 million below the adjusted base. So the biennium to biennium number reduced by $200 million, but we reduced the base, again, because of enrollment changes we didn't recognize, by almost $350 million in this case.
Now, Mr. Chairman, that's why I asked the question. I think it's important to know what that total cut was, because when I'm looking at the funding level for higher education, the number I use is the 3.8, which is the assuming that we would want to pay for enrollment. So that the base was really cut by 380 and then adjusted for the students. I think is what essentially happened. Is that not correct, Mr. Bird?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that's close to correct. It's actually the number, the 380 you're thinking of is the amount that the system budgets, base budgets were reduced. We did, however, put additional money above the base into the financial aid account. So this committee's collective reduction from base was only 350 million, but it was 380 million at the two public systems.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm focusing on. I was going to ask another question that you kind of opened the door then for, and what was the cancel back from ESOL, or projected cancel back then for the biennium, being that they were given an additional increase, and I hear they didn't do that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the November revenue forecast projects a cancellation of, I believe, $31 million at ESOL from the primarily from the state grant fund, although also from the reciprocity program.
And Mr. Chairman, that's been an issue that I've been, as members that are returning to this committee know, that I've been concerned about, and other members of the committee have been concerned about, because when we get our target number and then we have an agency that requests more than they need and that gets canceled back to the general fund, that means that in case of the last biennium in particular, that the University of Minnesota and Minsky would cut more than need be to cover the financial aid projections. But we have a lot of biennium where there's been that cancel back, and it's been a thing that's continually recurring, and it creates a problem for, in my view, this committee overall, because we don't get to use the resources that we've been allocated for other things. And we'll probably be talking more about that on another day, but being that the differences in how we talk about the base were put on the table, alert folks that that's one issue that we may have some discussion on.
Okay. Mr. Berg, you want to continue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just, as a side note, again, I'll refer to the second packet of information I have, which I don't intend to run through, as a summary of the actions of the 2003 legislature that discusses the base issue, and both the biennium to biennium issue and the base issue in detail for each account. So members want that information, it's available in the packet. Turning to the seventh slide in the graphs packet, the Higher Education Services Office, 2006-2007 general fund base. I just wanted members to see the various programs that the Higher Education Services Office operates. Again, as you note on there, this one I've done in dollar amounts because that's the way we tend to talk about financial aid. But if you look at it, you see that 80% of that agency's funding is in the single program, the state grant program. There are, however, a variety of other programs operated by the agency. The, again, financial aid programs include post-secondary child care, work study, interstate tuition reciprocity. But the agency also operates the Learning Network of Minnesota, which is a statewide telecommunications system. It operates the Minnesota College Savings Program, which is our state's 529 savings program. It has two library programs, which Minitex and MinLink, which are state attempts to have better value by having library services shared amongst all users and paid for in a single place, and an agency administration. Moving on, the next slide has the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and it's followed by the U of M's total revenue budget.
Mr. Berg, can we just interrupt for just a moment? Sure. Representative Abrams has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Berg, is the $2.2 million for the Minnesota College Savings Program, what is that? Is it the tax credit? What is the $2 million?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, is the largest portion of that, and I don't know it percentage-wise, it's 90-some percent of it is matching dollars. The Minnesota program has a sweetener in it to get lower-income families to attempt to save for college. There is a match for families below, I believe, $50,000 in income of up to 15% of their contributions to a total match from the state of $300. And for families with between 50 and I believe the cap is 80,000, there is a 5% match of theirs up to a total of $300. So about a little over $1 million a year of that money is slated for matching dollars to provide an incentive for families to save.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Burley, this is actually administered by HESO. It doesn't touch the Department of Revenue. It is basically goes from HESO into the 529 account kept with Minnesota College Savings Program, so it doesn't touch the tax area. Am I correct in that understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, that's essentially correct. HESO has a management contract. Our program is the funds are actually managed by TIAA CREF. And the agency is the administrative agency in the state which receives the appropriation, has minimal administrative costs. Verifying, like in financial aid, a family which wants to get into the working claim of matching program has to submit a tax return. And the agency takes a look at the tax return to verify eligibility, but the revenue department is not involved, to my knowledge.
Representative Filowski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, there was litigation pending with employees of the Higher Education Service Office. Has that litigation been resolved? And if it has been resolved, was there any impact on the HESO budget?
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Filowski, I do not know the answer to that question for sure. You'll have to pursue it with HESO. I believe they were close to a settlement. It was budget. The anticipated amount of the settlement was budgeted. And I don't actually know if the final agreement is settled.
Mr. Chair, just when HESO presents its budget, I would be very interested in that amount.
Representative Opatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berg, you mentioned that the issue of the $30 million turnback to the general fund from the state grant program, is that reflected in this $281 million? Is that before the turnback?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Opatz, the 281 is the base going forward. This is a fixed appropriation program. So the 281 assumes the $30 million goes forward. So that is, it has not been reduced for monies that will be turned back.
Similarly, on the reciprocity program, what was the amount for the turn back?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Opatz, $7.2 million, I believe, is the entire amount of the appropriation.
So, again, the presumption that this committee made was that it was going to cost about $7 million. It turned out not to cost anything.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Opatz, I forget you weren't on last session, but the cost of those agreements has been steadily declining over a period of time, and the base for that program has been reduced gradually, but it's been reduced in a conservative fashion. It has been the agency's preference not to get in a position where we would have potentially a bill owing to another state which money is not appropriated for, and so that has been reduced at a very gradual pace while the cost of the agreements has plummeted. In fact, Wisconsin paid us last year close to $3 million, a little over $3 million.
Mr. Burke, you want to continue?
Mr. Chairman, moving on from the higher ed survey, as I say, I was moving on to the system total budgets. I like to show members this graph because there is a great deal of misinformation about how much state money is in the system budget. The Minsky budget is now about $1.5 billion annually, of which only 38% comes from state appropriations, and now about 37% comes from tuition and fees. I think when you get an overview from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, you'll see a graph they have that shows their tuition and appropriations lines converging. They have a fairly small portion of federal grants and of state grants from other agencies, but they have been prioritizing trying to increase those lines. And if you move to the university, of course, the University of Minnesota has a great deal of other revenue sources other than the state. And of their close to now $2.3 billion total revenue budget, about 26% of that figure now comes from state appropriations. That 26% includes the state specials, which are now a little over 10% of their general fund appropriations, and about 18% is coming from tuition and fees. So a very sizable amount of the total higher ed budgets that are out there are coming from other sources.
Representative Lance.
Thank you. Mr. Byrd, if I read this graph correctly, the grants and contracts are those things like federal grants from NIH and stuff like that?
Sir, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lance, those kinds of items would be together.
Representative Lance?
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Byrd, the state and Minnesota is appropriating about the same amount as our University of Minnesota is getting from the federal government and other contract sources. Is that right?
Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lance, yes, but I would point out, again, these issues get complicated. I'd like people to see the whole budget here. On the other hand, grants and contracts are almost always restricted funds, which cannot be used for any, generally speaking, any purpose other than the purpose of the grant or the contract. Again, that's speaking for the university, but I suspect that having seen this before, they will emphasize the importance of the flexibility of state funding, which they can spend on things that are needed, whereas almost all these other areas of their budget tend to be restricted.
Representative Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Byrd, in the tuition and fees category, as I recall, that is the area where any state financial aid is categorized. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lass, yes, sort of. I mean, since we don't book a state grant as other than an expenditure from the state grant fund, it's a grant to an individual. When that money ends up in the coffers of a university or a college, it comes in as tuition dollars.
Thank you. Mr. Berg, anything further?
Mr. Chairman, just the final thing, almost final thing I will go through here. The next two pages talk about the post-secondary phase changes, and I'm not going to go through these in a great deal of detail, but since the November forecast, there have been some comments from members who read in the paper that Minsky's enrollment is a little bit lower this fall than it was the previous year, and then subsequently saw this as a very sizable increase for enrollment increases in higher education and are curious as to how that can be the case. The first of these pages goes through and shows just generally what the size of the base increases of the two systems are and how much of them are recurring and how much are one time. Just a couple of comments. This all hits in the November forecast prior to the main budget session because unlike K-12, the higher ed base only gets adjusted once every biennium, and it's in the November forecast prior to going into the budget session to fund the next biennium. So it all happens at once. K-12 adjusts its enrollment units every forecast. The base of higher education varies up and down in increments of 2% changes. So if the system-wide full-time equivalent enrollment varies up or down by a 2% band, then they can claim or are also have to pay back if they miss, if they don't make their enrollment, they fall 2% below it. They lose money in their base, but those base changes in increments of 2% all happen in the November forecast of the second year of the biennium.
Mr. Byrd, Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Byrd, I was wondering, high school students that attend college under post-secondary option, do you know how many of those do so in the state of Minnesota, and are they counted in their college enrollment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I don't know that off the top of my head. I can get you that figure. It's, yes, they are counted as part of the higher ed base, but because the deal in post-secondary enrollment funding is those students go without tuition at the schools they go to. The post-secondary district pays the college the portion of the general education dollars they receive for that student for the time at which they are not in the secondary school environment, which sort of acts in lieu of tuition. And then those full-time equivalents are included in the higher education enrollment base at half the value of a regular student. So higher education funds them on the margin. Secondary education funds them only to the degree they're not in school, and then there's no tuition. So the total sum is that those students are taken on the margin in higher ed, and the family pays no tuition. And I can give you the numbers each system has. I don't have the numbers.
Mr. Mesterberg, thank you. I would be interested in those numbers.
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, then again, the base changes occur all in the November forecast in the second year of the biennium. And the way you reconcile that, for instance, MinSCU's enrollment went down a little bit this year, but they have a substantial base increase relative to enrollment, is to see that when we adjust once every 2 years, that the adjustments, in fact, can take into changes in three biennium. November of 2004, when the base changes occurred, we changed for actual enrollment in the 2002-2003 biennia, because in 2003, when we passed the current biennial bill, we didn't know what the actual enrollment numbers in fiscal 2003 were. So those were based on the biennium before that. So we go back in November and we correct the actual for the last year of the last biennium. Then we move that base into the current year, where we assume what the systems would have done had they known in 2003 what their 2003 real enrollment was. Then you correct for current enrollment that is above or below that adjustment. And then you move forward and you look at the next biennium. So we essentially are taking enrollment changes for 5 years into account in the November forecast. And while MinSCU lost a little bit of enrollment, I don't remember what it was not enough to trigger a 2% reduction in their total enrollment. And it was not even below the level of where the base ends up getting to after you take into account 5 years worth of increases. So very rudimentary explanation. There's a lot of detail behind that, but suffice to say that enrollment has increased a great deal in the last couple of years. It went down just a little bit this fall. The next page has an example of how you get to that number, a very simple example of how you get to that number for MinSCU. Again, given the time constraints we have, I'm not going to go through that with you. I would urge members, if they're interested in this subject, to look through it a little more. I plan to put out some more detailed information to the committee on that, because this is a very summary explanation of how we get to the base changes. But these bullets on the MinSCU example will give members hopefully a little bit of an idea of how those step changes flow into the base enrollment. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'll just conclude the last two pages on this committee, like other finance committees. We'll need to make capital investment recommendations this year. Under House rule, finance committees need to provide some sort of recommendation to the chair of the capital investment committee. My understanding is the chair of the Representative Dorman intends to move fairly rapidly in getting underway. The last two pages of the packet I gave you have the House 2004 capital budget, which has a column essentially in the middle of it that says House Committee Recommendation, and the committee priorities column next to it that show the systems requests in the order that this committee ranked them last year. And then the last two columns have the funding that was in the House capital investment bill last year. Now, if you go to the very last page in this packet, you'll see the governor's recommendations for capital investments for higher education, 2004 and 2005 compared. They are fairly similar. The governor added a project at the two projects at the university and added inflation on the general the large scale construction project. He added some inflation and sort of a project and a half. He added a project at Minsky that was not funded at all in the prior year for technology updated classrooms and increased the funding substantially in another one, which was the science renovations, and also added inflation to those projects that are large construction. I will note that the difference between these two, if you look at the funding sources, the Minsky College higher education large-scale capital projects are assessed one-third depth service back to the system. In the case of MINSCU, which does not have its own bonding authority, the state bonds for the entire cost, and a third of that is assessed back, which is why at the bottom of the MINSCU column you'll see the total and then a portion that's listed GO and a portion that's listed one-third. The university has bonding authority of its own, and in this case the governor has listed the portion that the state would pay for as GO bonding and assume that the U will pay the rest of the costs. And so the university is expected to pay a third of the cost. It's simply not reflected in the governor's recommendations because they will bond for it on their own. And Mr. Chairman, given the time constraints, I'll stop there and see if there are questions.
Okay. The good news is that the test on Wednesday is canceled. So. We do have two members that we'd like to have just take a moment to introduce themselves to all of us. Representative Abler, would you go first?
Hi, Jim Abler, Representative Oka in the city of Ramsey. It's my first time on this committee, my seventh year in the legislature, and I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. And Representative Dempsey.
I'm Jerry Dempsey from Red Wing. We have a technical college that I represent, and I'm glad to be a member of this committee.
Representative Valencia, do you have a question? Okay. Anyone have a question? Seeing none, the meeting on Wednesday is canceled. That's what I was kind of saying in a Norwegian way. So next meeting will be next Monday, and this meeting
Wednesday.
Yep. Next meeting will be next Wednesday, not this coming Wednesday. And this meeting is concluded.